some batteries while you're in there, some double A's for flavor. So, in case you were not here this morning, I was not here this morning, Rachel was not here this morning, I was not here this morning, we were covering for Greg up in Randolph, up there, thanks, sir. We were covering for Greg and Randolph as they are gone on their, this is family reunion, I suppose it was. So it was good to be up there with them. I'd never been up there before, but as you can tell, they are excited about Greg's energy and all of that good stuff. So it was interesting and good to be up there. But we were glad to be back tonight. So I made them the guinea pigs of the sermon that I'm going to preach tonight, as I made you guys the guinea pig of the class that I taught there this morning. So it's a little give and take situation, and I just gotta go ahead and tell you, if you ask my wife how long I preached this morning, it was way too long, and I agree. So I'm going to try to hit the gas pedal, so if you're not ready to hit the ground running tonight, you're probably going to be swimming. So I'm just telling you that up front. Well, I got to fly in order to get you out of here on time, to which I intend to do. But I need one other comment to make before I forget about it. So I got a text this morning while we were at Randolph saying, from Beth, Coletta, saying, apparently I gave birth to my husband, because she asked me, Michael texted me yesterday about the bulletin, about their baby's name. Was he Junior? Because his name is Michael. Is he Junior? I said, no, he's not Junior. He said, well, do you know his middle name? I said, well, I think his middle name is Robert, which is, I thought, Mike's dad's name. Well, it turns out Michael Robert is actually Beth's husband. But the baby is actually Michael Joseph. So it's a Michael J, but not that. So I threw Michael under the bus kind of on that. So I decided, you know what, I better go ahead and not run him over again. So nevertheless, she did not give birth to her husband, but her baby boy. So last Saturday, we were able to go to Pennsylvania and get approved to adopt these two little bad boys right here. Well, we finally went to pick them up on Saturday, and I was thinking about a lot of things because these particular dogs are old. They are somewhere between 8 and 10 years old, maybe even a little older than that. And the owner did not want to take care of them anymore. It wasn't that the owner was unable, apparently, but the owner did not want to. And a lot of times, no one wants to take in an old dog, and especially not two old dogs, right? Well, because of that, the shelter was basically giving them away. Like, this is a donation. Whatever you're basically willing, here's the suggested donation. But even if you don't pay that, they're like, we'll basically take whatever you're willing to give. And that got me thinking about something, biblically speaking, that I hope is going to make sense to you in just about 3 seconds. I'm going to put this diagram up. This is called a Venn diagram. I had to Google the name of it because I couldn't remember of it. It's where you have three different things, but all three things are intertwined and overlap. So one of the things that might come to your mind might be the Olympic rings. That comes to your mind. So the Bible is full of these kind of triads, these three things that go together. The most obvious being the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Those three things going together. And then Paul, when he writes in his letters, he often writes of faith, hope, and love. They often go together. But there is a phrase that is used a lot in the Old Testament that is a triad that you don't see in the New Testament as a triad, but you do see it as a couplet. Couplet being two, just to make sure we're all on the same page there. But what you will see is that in the Old Testament, and we saw it in Psalm 146 and verse 9, that the stranger, or the alien, or the sojourner, your translation might say, the fatherless, a.k.a. the widow, or not a.k.a. the widow, a.k.a. the orphan and the widow. So you will see that phrase all throughout the Old Testament combined, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. Well, I was thinking about
the orphan because of the dogs. Nobody wants those old dogs. Just like when an orphan gets old, no one wants to adopt a 12 or 13 year old kid most of the time. That is a very rare situation. Well, the Bible and God's character is the opposite of that. I want you to look there in Psalm 149. What we're going to see in tonight's lesson is that the way that the Lord treats these unwanted or these unable to support themselves, God treats them just like He would the most important person, just like He would the person who is able to not only provide for himself but for other people. They're all equal. He handles that the same. And what we see is that that is the Lord's character, and the Lord expects that of His people's character. And we will see that in the Old Testament, and then we will see that in the New Testament as we make application at the end. So there, if you're there in Psalm 146 and verse 9, I won't go back and read it because Pat read it for us, but I want you to notice the phrases, what he says there. In this great psalm about how blessed it is and how great the Lord is, you have that verse 9, the Lord watches over, my translation says, or yours may say, guards over the sojourner, the stranger. That word guard or watches over is our word that we see in the Old Testament at the beginning. Adam, when the garden was created, he was told to keep the garden. That's the same word. When Adam and Eve, after they had sinned, they were kicked out of the garden. Remember, the angels were placed on the outside with the flaming sword. They were there to guard the garden, same word. And when Cain kills Abel because Abel's sacrifice was accepted, and the Lord says, hey, where's your brother? He says, am I my brother's keeper? It is our same word. So we might say guardian. He, the Lord, is the guardian of strangers. Somebody that doesn't have anybody, really, they're of a different nation or they are a different people in a strange land. When no one would take them in, the Lord does. He is their guardian. And we understand the difference in a guardian and a parent, don't we? A parent is the one that they have to. The guardian is the one that has now taken over after someone else is not. God is the guardian of that. And we also see that He supports the fatherless, the orphan, and the widow. The people that can't support themselves, they got no mom, they got no dad. Whether that be by death or that be by the parents gave them up, and as awful as that may be, God takes in people like that. And the widows that cannot provide for themselves, guess who supports them? King James says relieves. That's not a phrase in which we would ever use in today's term. Well, we get the idea of supports them. You help them. You sustain them or uphold them because they need assistance. That is what the Lord does for anyone. And so you see that kind of same language in Deuteronomy chapter 10. I want you to turn to Deuteronomy 10. And I don't have time to go into this. This is partly where I lost my time in the morning. But in verse 12, there's a basic statement of, what does the Lord want from you? Love Him, fear Him, and do good. And then it goes down, and we get into the heart of the matter in verse 16. Saying to the children of Israel before they take over the land of Canaan, He says, circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart, and be no longer stubborn. As we talked about Wednesday night, the children of Israel, even coming out of Egypt, they were stubborn people. And so, verse 17. For Jehovah, your God of gods and a Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God, and here's a phrase, who is not partial, nor does He accept a bribe. He doesn't care who you are. How many times does the Bible say that? He does not care who you are. He, verse 18, executes justice for who? The fatherless. Who? And the widow. And what does He do? He loves the sojourner giving him food. There's our three together. He shows and he executes justice for the fatherless and the widow, the ones who have nobody to stand up for him. He gives them what is right. He gives them what is just. And the stranger, even though they have nothing, he shows them love by giving them food and clothing. As we say, God makes the sun, the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. It does not matter unless God is punishing someone. That is the only time in which he withholds is when punishment is needed. That is just who Jehovah is. That is just who the Lord is. He helps those that others would not. That others would diminish or look down upon. And so because of that, he expects his people. He expected his people Israel in the Old Testament to be like that. Consider now verse 19. Love the sojourner, love the stranger, therefore. Like, he loves the strangers. You love the stranger as well. Why? For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. See, God had already dealt with them. They were in a place that they were captives. They were not in their own lands. Some of them had been born there, but it wasn't theirs. They were not Egyptians. What did the Egyptians call them? Hebrews. They were strangers in a foreign place. And what did God do? You can see this back up in around verse 14. He chose their descendants above all other people. God said, I want you to be my special people. And I want you to be like me. And so, because you used to be a stranger, you need to show love to strangers. And that gets me to one application. How often do we forget where we come from? People that either come from money or they don't come from money. We'll say they don't come from money. And they start living and they start going all crazy. And they make all this money in their life. And they forget all the people back home and all the ways that they got there. They forgot where they came from. Because now they're all so caught up in what they have now. And what the Lord is saying is, don't you dare forget where you came from. Because where you came from are the exact types of people you need to help. Because that is what your God did. Or you go to chapter 14. And there were laws about this. In chapter 14, you have it. Oh, by the way, there's all kinds of phrases there. But notice in verse 4, notice in chapter 14 here, that a lot of different things happen, but one of the things in which they were commanded to do is every third year, they were to bring out a tenth of their produce for certain people. I want you to notice in chapter 14 and verse 27, he says, do not neglect the Levite who is in your towns, for he has no portion or inheritance with you. Remember the children of Levi, they were not given a land like all of the other tribes were. They were given cities. Some of them were priests, some of them were not priests, but they did not have lands. And so it was incumbent upon the other Israelites to provide and to help them in this. Well, what we're saying is, that is one of their own. That is their brethren. Don't forget your brethren, okay? Now look down in verse 29, as he says it again. And the Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance with you, and who? The sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow who are within your town shall come and eat and be filled. You bring this every third year for all of these people who are living among you who don't have any way to take care of themselves. You do that. And notice the Lord gives a reason for that. That Jehovah your God may bless you with all the work of your hands that you do. Don't you think God would be a little more generous to people who, when they have a lot, they give a lot? To whom much is given, what? Much is required. And if he sees that you are faithful in little, what does he do? You will also be faithful in much. And so, be like Jehovah. Be like the Lord is what he's saying, and the Lord will bless you. If you're like him, the Lord will bless you. You don't have to worry about being hungry. David said, I've never seen a righteous man go hungry or begging for bread. Because he's always doing what he needs to do. And when he finds himself in that downtime, you know who's there to help him out? His brethren. They're there to help him. But what about the one that's never helped anybody out? Most people aren't ready to jump on that bandwagon unless they're just strictly doing it because they know they have to do it. And they remember that they were strangers. And they think about themselves, and we might say they put themselves in the other person's shoes. Then, okay, fine. I'll help this individual out. But in chapter 24, he goes a step further with this law. So when they had harvest time, and they're going through and they're gathering their wheat, or they're gathering their barley, or they're gathering whatever it is that they're gathering, and it falls on the ground, verse 19, what are they supposed to do? You don't go back and get it. Why? Because it shall be for the sojourner, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. Why? In order that the Lord your God may bless you. I want you to think about it for just 2 seconds, very practically. So you got a $10 bill. You drop your $10 bill. How many of us are going back to get the $10 bill? Every single one of us, right? There ain't nobody that is leaving a $10 bill. Imagine you own a piece of property. You've gathered in a sheaf or a bundle of wheat. One of your workers drops that on the floor. And that is $10. That may be $100. That may be a considerable amount. And the Lord says, don't you dare pick that up. That is for the stranger, the widow, and the fathers. But it's on my property. No, no, no. Leave it. And the Lord will bless you. So we know the most obvious story of where this practically comes into play, don't we? We know Ruth, widow, mother-in-law, widow. They go and they are gleaning because they're just... It's almost like the dog waiting for the crumbs to fall from the table, right? They'll take anything that's there, tiniest little bit, we don't care. And remember, on that first day, she comes back, and her mother-in-law, Naomi's like, what happened? Because she can't believe the amount. And what was Boaz telling his people to do? Leave it for her. That is generosity. That is someone who is watching out for this group of people. And I got to tell you, that was not normal Israel. Boaz was the exception to the rule. They were much like people today, penny pinching. Every little bit was mine, and they were watching it to the nth degree. Not Boaz. And what did the Lord do? Man, the Christ came through him. At a great cost to Boaz, nonetheless. But then notice how he goes down and he's talking in the very last verse as he mentions again, so you got grapes or what have you. But notice verse 22. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore I command you to do this day. Remember, you were in a strange place under captivity and I freed you. Do not forget that. So what happened if they didn't carry this out? If the individual didn't carry it out? Look in chapter 27. In 27 and 28 of Deuteronomy, we have the blessings and the cursings. So you would think that because I said blessings and the cursings, chapter 27 would be a blessing. No, 27 is the cursings, right? You go to chapter 27 and look down with me in verse 20. What is the verse I'm looking for? I got it on my board here. Verse 19, thank you. Cursed be anyone who perverts the justice due to who? The sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. And the people shall say, Amen. If you don't give that, and I found it interesting, this idea of you withhold, or you don't give the justice that is due. That is our word, you hold out. I want you to think about, if you've ever used that phrase, you're holding out on it. You've got it there. But you're not willing to give everything that is there. That is the phrase that is kind of being pictured there, apparently. Is that there is something that is right to do for this group of people, and I have it within my power to do it, and I'm holding out and I'm holding back. The person that does that is not blessed by the Lord. The person that does that is going to be cursed by the Lord. So, I alluded to it earlier, but Israel as individuals and Israel as a nation, did they fall into the blessing side of things or the cursing side of things? They absolutely did not do this. They just didn't. And so you've got a lot of different phrases. I want you to go to Jeremiah the 7th chapter. I want to see it from Jeremiah chapter 7. In Jeremiah chapter 7, Israel has already been, the northern tribes have already been exiled and sent into Assyrian captivity. In the time of Jeremiah, of this particular portion, is that they are not gone yet. Judah has not been taken away yet. And in fact, they're told in verse 3 and in verse 5 to amend their ways. There's still a chance for them. You need to correct this, and if you correct this, I want you to notice in verse 7 what happened. If you correct this, you would see this at the end of verse 3 or at the beginning of verse 7, but I'll use verse 7. Then I will let you dwell in this place, in the land that I gave of old to your fathers forever. If you will change your ways, you can stay. Well, I want you to notice what the problem is. In verse 4, they are told, do not trust in these deceptive words. This is the temple of the Lord. The temple of the Lord. The temple of the Lord. Michael's talked about that a lot throughout the time. They were all happy and they took courage that there was a temple where God said His name. And because there was a temple where God said His name and that belonged to them, everything was good. So whatever they did didn't matter. They had the temple. Jeremiah says, don't trust that. Don't trust in that. Now notice verse 5. For if you truly amend your ways and your deeds, and if you truly execute justice one with another, use your Levite, with your brethren, then notice the phrase. And if you do not oppress the sojourner, the stranger, the fatherless, or the widow. There's our group. We're in the exact same thing as Deuteronomy said, but yet what they're doing is what they're not supposed to do. And he says, I'm giving you a chance. Correct that and you can stay in this land. But I want you to notice who is included in just as being just as evil. Notice the next phrase. Or those who shed innocent blood in this place. Or others who go after gods to your own harm. The idolater, the murderer, is equivalent to the one who does not support the sojourner, the widow, and the orphan. You and I, humanly speaking, would not consider those things to be equal. We would say that murderer is worse. And God would say, you're all evil. You will be cursed and you will be moved out. In fact, he says that in verse 15. It's basically done. They're not going to change their way. So verse 15, because he had come to them over and over and over again. You can see that now in verse 13. And now, because you've done all these things, declares Jehovah, and when I spoke to you persistently, you did not listen. And when I called you, you did not answer. God gave them a chance over and over and over. But they refused. Back to Deuteronomy, they did not circumcise the foreskin of their heart. They were stubborn. And so what will he do? Just like he did with his tabernacle, his tent in Shiloh, it was taken over. And 15, I will cast you out of my sight, as I cast out all your kinsmen, the northern tribes, and all the offspring of Israel. You just did not listen to me. I tried. but you didn't. And so, guess what? They, just like Israel, they were cast out of the Lord's sight. In chapter 22 there of Jeremiah, Jeremiah is sent to the king to say basically the exact same thing. Ezekiel 22 would describe very similar language, except for they've already been taken captive, it would appear. The point being, Israel was not like the Lord. So what about in the New Testament? Do you think God would want us to be like Him? He would want us to have the same type of character and the same type of character that He asked of His people Israel? Yep. He doesn't put those three phrases together, but these phrases are used all throughout. There's the couplet of the time that it is used, the widows and the orphans, in James chapter 1 and verse 27, and we will get there in just a moment. But I want to start with the stranger. The Bible talk about, the New Testament talk about strangers in any way? Sure does. Think of Ephesians chapter 2. Flip over to Ephesians 2. And Ephesians, I don't think that's a book. Ephesians is a book, Ephesians is not. But Ephesians chapter 2, and around verse 13, he says to the Gentiles, you were once alienated. You were separated from the commonwealth of Israel. You were not a part of Israel. You were separated from the promises. They were strangers. They were aliens. They were sojourners. But now they have access to God in the same way that the Jews do, that is through the Spirit, through Jesus Christ. And so Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 9 sounds very similar to what is said in Deuteronomy to the nation of Israel. Notice verse 19. So then, you are no longer strangers and aliens, but what are you? Fellow citizens with the saints and members of the house of God. You're no longer a stranger. You are now a part of this community. Your citizenship is there. So maybe some of you have moved from another country where you were naturally born, but you have become a U.S. citizen. Your citizenship is here now. Well, that's what Christians are. You were once a stranger, but now you're an American. Well, you were once alienated and separated, but now in Christ you're part of a nation. But notice there's something else here. And you are members of the household of God. You didn't have a father, but now you know what you have? You have God as the Father. You are a part of this family now. And even though that phrase is not there, that picture very much is there. And so, does God care about how we treat strangers? Isn't that Matthew 25? When He's separating the sheep from the goats. And not the sheep, but the sheep. Yeah, sheep. I mean, I cannot talk, but, you know, the sheep and the goats, He separated them, right? One on the right, the good ones on the right. And what did He say to those that do well? I was naked and you clothed me. I was hungry and you fed me. And then here's the phrase, I was a stranger and you welcomed me. And they said to Him, He said, blessed are you of my Father. Come, enter into the joys of your Lord. But Lord, when did we see you naked, hungry, a stranger? And you know the answer. When you did it to the least of these, my brethren, so you did it to me. Well, what about the flip side of that? To the others, to the goats, He said, I was naked, you didn't clothe me. I was hungry, you didn't feed me. I was a stranger, and you didn't take me in. Do you think that is serious at all? You think the Lord still cares about those that are strange to us? 100% He does. Does God care about how the East Orange Church deals with strangers? In one sense, yes, doesn't He? Because it's a reflection on Him. Well, that's not what Matthew 25 is talking about, is it? Matthew 25 is talking about the individual responsibility. And so Michael might talk about this more in the year, and he might or might not, so I'll go ahead and throw like four sentences on this. So often, people are pleased that their company or their organization or their church is so philanthropic. They're giving to all of these people and they're helping out to all of these people. And I say, okay, so what did you do to help out? And the answer is usually nothing. Take the door outreach, right? Brother Barrett's done a ton of work on that. I haven't been able to be here yet. I got nothing from that, right? We've had visitors come on Wednesday night for the last 3 weeks, and those numbers are growing from that little group. You know who can't say that they get any credit for that? Me. You know who can? Anyone that's come and tried. You see, we can't be like, oh, Brother Barrett's out there doing that, so that's all great and that's all good. We're doing a lot of good things here at East Orange. Yeah, okay. Church is. But what about me as an individual? Because the Lord's not going to ask me, well, what'd your church do? He might about some things, but you know what he's going to ask me? Wesley, what did you do? So I don't think he's going to call me Wes. He's probably going to call me Wesley since that's my given name. Well, what did you do? You didn't take me in. That's how serious we're dealing with here. Or that James chapter 1 and verse 27. I want you to think about it in James 1, 27. In James 1 and verse 27, we have that couplet. Now, you remember back to Deuteronomy where we mentioned this before. Or it wasn't Deuteronomy, it was Jeremiah chapter 7. He said, don't trust in deceitful words. The temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. You'll notice the verse right before in James chapter 1. Notice the verse right before in verse 26. If anyone thinks he is religious and he does not bridle his tongue, but he deceives his heart, this person's religion is useless. Worthless. See how that is there? That word or idea of being deceived or defrauded is used 3 times in chapter 1 of James. You see it in verse 16. Don't be deceived, my beloved brethren. And then verse 22. Be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves and so forth. It says it 3 times, right? Because you know why? It's easy for Christians to deceive themselves because you know what? They're going to the right church. But what does he say now, verse 27? Verse 26, you weren't keeping your tongue the way it ought to be. Cursing. Maybe you're, as he's going to talk about later in the book, you're cursing your brethren, but you're blessing God. Don't work that way. You can't say that out of one side of your mouth and bless God with that. Or as we say, you wouldn't kiss your mother with that mouth. It just is not acceptable. So now notice verse 27. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God. What does God want? The Father is this. To visit orphans and widows. There's your couplet. In their affliction. And to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Whose responsibility is it to take care of the widows and the orphans and the strangers? If anyone thinks he is religious, to keep oneself unspotted from the world. He's not saying the Church of Christ needs to be out there supporting orphans with their funds. He's saying, Wesley, you need to be supporting the orphans and the widows and the strangers. But yet we get all comfortable. And so you have passages like 1 Timothy chapter 5. I want you to flip to 1 Timothy 5. You don't have orphans mentioned here, but you do have widows mentioned here. And you have chapter 5 and verse 3 that you need to honor widows who are truly widows. What does that mean? That means there are widows who are not what he's talking about here. Well, he's going to talk about widows that can't support themselves. So it's a little different than a widow who has lost her husband who had a huge life insurance policy and she's set for life. She is not a widow in need, is she? She's in affliction because she's lost her husband, but she's not in a support type of situation. Or someone who had planned very well and they had retirement set up and all those things and they can live off of that. That's not someone who is in need. But notice this phrase now in verse 4. But if there is a widow who has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show, notice the phrase, godliness. That comes right back to our Psalm 149, that it is the character of God that when there is a widow, an orphan, or a stranger who is in need, what does God do? He jumps on that. Let the children and the grandchildren show godliness to their own house and make some return for their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. Whose responsibility is it? The family's responsibility. But yeah, family members aren't Christians. Okay?
Family members are to show some godliness.
It's a tough situation, isn't it? It's really difficult. Because what he's going to point out is that especially if you are a believer, if you're a Christian and your parents are in need or your family is in need and you, verse 8, do not provide for his own relatives and especially the members of his own house, he has denied the faith and he is worse than an unbeliever. If you call yourself a Christian and you will not help your family out, you are not a Christian. You are someone who is living opposite of God. That is not godly. You are now worse than an unbeliever. That's how serious God takes this one, isn't it? Because there are widows who are truly in need, and he would go on to describe that situation. These widows who are certain age, they have washed the feet, they've done all these different things. And do you know why he goes through that? It's because the church is restricted in who the church can support. The church, the collection is for the saints. And I know Michael is going to talk more about that throughout the year. The collection is for the saints. But I want you to notice the phrasing that is in verse 16, as he closes out this statement about the widows. He said, if any believing woman has relatives who are widows, or if any believer has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. And let not the church be burdened, so that it may care for those who truly are widows. You see, the church is restricted. The church is then burdened when the individuals do not do their job. So who is it up to? It is the individual. And the individual is not restricted. The individual is not only not restricted, he is supposed to help anybody and everybody because that is what his Lord does. Brothers and sisters, I don't know about you, but that is a challenge. Because I like my money. I like my things. So I used this illustration this morning. We were skiing in Utah, and I think Kenny was on this trip as well. And we go to this church, and this lady finds out that we're skiing in Utah. James was there too on this trip. This lady, I said Denver this morning, it was Utah. This lady offers us her basement to stay in the next time that we come to ski. We were strangers to her. But yet that was her offer. And I said to myself, I'm not staying in this woman's basement. But it was different. That was, a Matthew 5, they will see your good works and they'll glorify your Father in heaven. I wasn't about to stay there. But that was somebody who saw a stranger and they wanted to take it in. Am I proactive in trying to do things like that? Or am I just like, oh, I'm trying to play the I don't know card on this one. No. God actively seeks to help. And what God is wanting the individuals to do, His people to do, to actively seek as well. I cut it down a little shorter, even with my little flubs. But I think you get the point, don't we? Don't hold back from anybody. Go and find people to help so that we can show godliness to them. Maybe tonight, you are a stranger. You're still alienated from the promises of God. You've never been baptized into Jesus Christ and been placed in his body, had your sins washed away. You've not done that. And you still are an orphan. You don't have a father. Because, yes, God created you, but you can't go to him in the same way and cry, Abba, Father. Or maybe you're a widow, but now you're ready to be married as the bride of Christ and become no longer a widow, but married again. Why don't you do it tonight? Why don't you come be baptized into Jesus as we stand and as we sing?